Today, I thought I would chat with you about how we can improve our communications when things get a bit heated. When things get a bit heated, it's very easy to fall into the same patterns that our person that we're having communication with, right? Someone gets upset, they start yelling and screaming, we might start yelling and screaming back, and getting defensive. We get out of ourselves, the higher part of us that is the wiser part, the calmer part, the compassionate part, then not then somebody else's self, but then the other parts of us, right? And so we don't get many places. We might not get where we want. We might say things that we regret. We might hold grudges. We might allow it to fester and grow until the person we love we feel like hating, or worse, we start to feel indifferent to. So how do we improve our communications when things get heated? That's what I want to talk about today. But first, a little bit of a background on what's happening. So it is fall on our beautiful land. Little Bonnie and I are going for a walk. I am currently on stage 4 GAPS, so I am doing very well. I have so far, I've lost 10 pounds. And feeling good. My yoga is coming. I got both splits. Still working on the middle splits, but I'm getting both splits in. I have started my dance training. It's been slow because it's been slow going, but I'm good with it because even small progression is progression. And but the most important part about what I'm doing is really just my mindset. So when I get up in the morning. And it's funny because I'm starting to already just get back into my schedule. I'm still calling myself on a retreat though. So that's what I'm talking about, mindset. So when I get up in the morning, I start to get a little stressed, sometimes going, oh, a little overwhelmed with all the things that I have to do. And I say to myself, oh, no, Cherise, you don't have to do any of that. You're on vacation, you're on retreat. And immediately I calm down. So what I am giving myself is the option. Okay, I think we talked about playing mind games with ourselves. We do. It's okay. It's okay to play mind games with ourselves. It's okay because what we're doing is we're telling our subconscious mind, right? We're telling our conscious mind and our subconscious mind, but we're telling our conscious mind, relax, and our subconscious mind is going, oh yeah, we can do this. We can relax. So we are playing mind games with ourselves, but if it's positive and it works in our advantage, go for it. So as soon as I say, no, it's okay. I can do what I want to do because I'm on vacation. I'm on retreat. Now, I've pretty much already started back on my full schedule, but just saying those words to myself allows myself to relax. And then I can start my day in a much more relaxed mode. And it really, what I'm doing is I'm giving myself a choice. I think we've talked about before that people like choices. People want to make their own decisions. And when I work with clients, it's not about me telling them what to do. It's about us coming up with a plan together based on their goals, their desires, their dreams, whatever it is, in their health or their life, their relationships, their work, their creativity, whatever it is that they want to work on. And coming up with activities, I'm going to call them directives because that's really what they're kind of called, is directives. There are some people call them action steps or whatever, things that they would do in the weeks between, or the week or weeks between me meeting with them again, to move forward onto their goals or their, you know, what they want in life. And so, but this isn't a solo. It's not me telling them what to do. It's a difference between a consultant and a coach. A consultant comes in and does, you know, a sweeping look and looks at everything and may look at everything in detail and say, you're doing this wrong, you're doing this wrong, you're doing this wrong, you're doing this wrong. And sometimes there is a definite place for a consultant, especially if you're a business and you're losing money and you're like, hey, just tell me what to do because we need to make some money here, right? So there's definitely a reason for consulting. But you know, whenever I think about consultants that come in and kind of do a changeover, I think about those, you know, those shows, those reality shows that where they come into your house and they get off the tree. What are you chasing? Leave this girl alone. Come on, let's go for a walk. You got to jump down. You got up. You got to come down. And so, and they go in and they like, and the house is a mess, right? it is a complete and utter mess. You know, the trash everywhere. It's just nothing, clothes everywhere. I mean, you've seen those shows. I mean, the house is a wreck. And then someone comes in and they completely go in and they clean the house and they make it absolutely beautiful. And then I always wonder, I like to know if they ever do a 2-year follow-up, what ends up happening? Because if these folks who haven't really figured out why they keep their home that way, what's the reason that they live in this chaos, and all they have is a clean house, then how long before, because it's not the house being dirty. I mean, there's a reason why they allow their house to become that way, right? And so if that is never addressed, the reasons behind them living that way, then how long does it take before they go back to living that way? So a consultant is great for coming in and helping you make changes, like to tell you what to do, right? Do this, do this, do this, do this. Especially if you're in crunch time, okay? You got to get something done. You need to know exactly how to do it. Boom. And at the same time, if you don't know where you're making the mistakes or why the mistakes are happening, then you may just end up repeating them again, right? So a coach is different than a consultant in that a coach is not here to tell you exactly what to do, but to find out, help you find out why you're doing what you're doing and, you know, the reasoning behind it. Why do you keep your house a mess? Why do you live in this chaos? What's the reason behind it, right? So we can solve those issues. We can find the deeper reasons, that the root cause, basically, and therefore you can clean up your own house. Or at the very least, at least keep your house clean once someone comes in and cleans it up. Because now you have a deeper understanding. So it's really important with my clients that it's not about me telling them what to do, because first of all, it doesn't last. I've said that before. But also because it's really their lives. And they have to be the ones to run their own lives. And they have to understand the reason behind what they do and why they do. What's the reason behind it? So they can work on that and figure out maybe a more helpful, better solution. So that's the difference between a consultant and a coach. And there's a place for consultant, as I said. Certainly there is. But true lasting changes isn't necessarily through a consultant. It's through understanding. And that comes through with a coach. Okay, all that being said. So you are in, I don't even know where I went there, but let's go, it's okay. So we're going back to having a heated discussion. And it's easy to fall into the trap, right, of getting into an argument and fighting and then having ill feelings towards each other and just, you know, and potentially ruining relationships. So I want to share with you a strategy that's called pacing and leading. And I'm going to give you an example of pacing and leading with a child. Now, children, you know, let's say a child falls down, bangs their knee and gets hurt, and they have a big scratch and they're bleeding. And some parents just run over and the parents themselves get all emotional and start to coddle the child. And oh my goodness, oh my gosh, you poor thing, oh, no, 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 right? And they start to get a little bit more anxious and the child feels that anxious and the child grows in anxiety and then neither one of them are doing well. Unfortunately, those children who are over-coddled, overprotected, right? And the next time the mother may go, okay, you can't go outside unless you have, you know, your knee guards on and your elbow guards on and your helmet. And we're just talking about playing outside in the yard, okay? So, but you know, you get those overprotective. We used to call them in my performing arts schools. You may have heard this term, helicopter moms, always flying over the child's head, right? And never really allowing them to breathe. And just super, super overprotective. Not allowing the child to fail, not allowing the child to feel pain, not allowing the child to learn from mistakes, overcompensating, basically. Those children, when they grow up, many, many times, turn into entitled adults, where they feel that they have, and we see a lot of that in today's society, because I think, yeah, I don't know, I have some theories on that, but why that is, but where, you know, as an adult, you don't feel like you have to pay your dues. You know, you want to go in and get the job, you want to get the highest paid job, even though you don't have the experience, and have very difficult control in regulating their emotions when something doesn't go their way, such as an election, or, you know, the boss gives them, you know, writes a report or tells them about, you know, ways they need to improve, and they get, you know, they become completely spoiled and unable to deal with the realities of life. So, not a real positive outcome, right? Now, everything I say, any child that is raised any of the ways I talk about, once they become an adult, they have the power within themselves, as we all do, because none of our parents were perfect. Like, zero parents were perfect. And I certainly wasn't, and my parents certainly weren't. But when we become adults, we have the choice at that point to decide whether we want to still continue living how we're living. So, you know, there's only so long that we can blame our parents. At that point, we have to get to the point where it becomes our responsibility if we're continuing the pattern that is disrupting our lives. All right, so let's say there's a child, now we'll take another parent, who falls down, scratches their knee, bangs their little knee's bleeding, has a big scrape, and they start crying. Well, you have some parents who just ignore the situation. And unfortunately, what those children start to learn is that their feelings don't matter. Unlike the first group, all their feelings matter, you know, the most important thing, and everybody needs to abide by my feelings, right? And don't hurt my feelings, don't trigger me. That's the first group. But the second group starts to believe their feelings don't matter and may even start to bury those feelings. And then bitterness and, you know, internal anger and turning in on oneself can happen to those children when they grow up to be adults. And they also may not have compassion for others. So, again, you know, if that's a problem, then as an adult, they have the power to change that, you know, by healing. Now, what I want to talk about, though, is pacing and leading. And I'm talking about children, but I'm going to bring this to adults, and you'll see how. So in pacing and leading, when someone comes in, well, first of all, when someone comes in, oh, let's keep it on the child for a second. So when a child gets hurt, right, the child is emotional, and then the child, you know, is looking for a reaction from you. Well, this is where pacing and leading comes in. So pacing means you match the other person's emotional state, their voice, their body language, you match them. That's pacing. And yet your words stay positive. So if a child gets hurt and they're looking at you and they start crying and they're hurt and they're, you know, really sad and crying and scared, and you say, oh, baby, and you match them. Honey, oh, you fell down. Oh, you must be really scared. Oh, I'm sure that really hurts. And you're pacing them. And what they're getting as a child is that you're understanding what they're feeling. But as soon as they look at you and they see that, oh, you're with them, you're getting them, right? You see it in their face, then you start to lead. And that's when you smile at them and you say, but you know what, honey? And you calm your voice down, and now you're leading the emotional roller coaster. You're leading, you're smoothing it out. You know what, honey? It's gonna be okay. How about we just go inside, we'll clean it up, we'll put a Band-Aid on it, and you know what? I'll give you a big kiss, and you come right back out here, and you can play some more. Now, that child, two things. He felt heard, seen, and like he mattered, right? Which is really what he wants. And second, he knows he'll be okay, and he can come out and play again. So you've paced him, you've understood the child's emotions, you've understood how he feels. He feels that because you're expressing the same emotional state in the sense of the quality of the power of your emotions. You're matching him, but yet you're keeping your words positive. Oh, honey, I'm sure that was really scary. Oh, I bet that really hurts, right? And it's gonna be okay. And then you lead them out of that emotional state into a more productive, resourceful state. So now this child feels heard, and knows he's going to be okay and that it's just going to be normal. Now, what ends up happening is the child will fall down again. And you may have seen this if you're a mom or just been around kids. And before, they may look at you to see how you're going to react before they react. Now, that happens too, right? And, you know, if you get all emotional and get all crazy and coddly, you know, like I talked about in that first group, well, then the child's going to get emotional and crying and you can't rationalize with kids anyway, but you know what I mean? You can't calm the child down. Or you could look at him and say, oh, you fell down again, right? Wow, but look at you. I bet you can get back up and do it again and start again. Try whatever you're doing, riding a bike, whatever, right? And try it again. So the child is going to look at you for emotional cues a lot of the time. And how you respond with those emotional cues, he's really kind of testing you, is what's happening. He doesn't know he is, so this isn't a conscious decision on his part or her part. But they're testing you. What are you going to do? And that's how I know I'm supposed to react, okay? So you notice them, you see them, they know, they see you seeing them, and then you lead them, right? You lead them on how to feel. Oh, it's okay. Yeah, you banged yourself up. Let's clean it up, and we'll come back out here and start playing again. No biggie. It happens sometimes. It's natural. We all fall down. And you could even bring in a story about how you fell down. So that's called pacing and leading. You start in their emotional state. Now, this works with adults too, so I'll get to that. You start with their emotional state, and then once they see that you are seeing them, then you can lead them out of that gently. But what's really important is that even though you may have the same emotional intensity as the other person, your words are positive. Your words are accepting. Your words are seeing the problem from their point of view. So you're not attacking them, right? That's the difference. So we can meet each other emotionally. We can pace each other in an argument, but usually it's accusations and pointing the finger at each other and blaming each other. That's not what we're doing here. We're meeting the emotions and expressing understanding while meeting the intensity of the emotions. We're keeping the words very positive, right? And accepting. And showing the person, the child in this case, that they are worthy and they matter. You see them and you understand their feelings. And then you lead them out of it. So that's called pacing and leading. Okay, how does this work with adults? The same way. It's the same way. Why? Oh, because quite honestly, adults really, in many ways, are no different than just over big grown children. And I don't mean that in a disrespect, I mean that quite honestly. Meaning when somebody is hurt, and when somebody is angry or something like that, now I'm not saying that there isn't a reason for any of those things, there certainly can be. But many times when we're getting into an argument and someone gets quote unquote triggered by something, they're not being triggered by their adult, rational, capable self. The child inside them is being triggered by something. And so when they can't think rationally, because it's really not them as the adult, it's them, the child. The child is still responding to something that happened way back when, and that trigger, that feeling, that childhood feeling, they may not recognize it. We don't always recognize when our child is screaming for to be paid attention to, but when we understand that when I argue with my husband, right? Sometimes we get in arguments, we still do, of course. I can see him and the things that he's saying and things that he's, expressing to me. And I see this is actually coming from a younger part of him. This is actually coming from something that's not here and now. It's a younger part. And so because we bring back our triggers and we get triggered by from things from our childhood, if those things haven't healed, and even if they have, I mean, sometimes they still come up regardless, right? I mean, my husband is a very mature, emotionally mature man, and yet none of us are there. We're still growing. I still react from my 8-year-old self sometimes, and we both catch ourselves and realize what we're doing, but it still happens. And if someone isn't aware that's what's happening, then they're responding from that 8-year-old that is still wanting, I'm saying 8, but it could be any age. still responding, but usually it's childhood. From that childhood experience where maybe they didn't feel seen, didn't feel heard, and didn't feel like they mattered. So, and again, it's not about always about bad parenting, okay? Because you can have the best of parents, but no parents are perfect. So we all let our kids down. Our parents have let us down. Even if we can say, I grew up and I had the best childhood, there were times that you were let down. We all were. So you don't have to have an abusive, you know, family to have been let down. It can be completely normal because guess what? We're human and humans let each other down. And we learn to accept that. That's just normal. You know, we're not going to be perfect. And we remember that, you know what? I believe you have the best intentions towards me because I know you love me. And what you said just hurt me, right? But none of us are perfect. So no childhood was perfect. Anyway, so that being said, when we're in a heated argument with our spouse, or it doesn't have to be with our spouse, it could be with a coworker, it could be anyone. I mean, you see a lot of people today having really emotional breakdowns on social media. You know, and we go and go into a lot of that. I don't want to go into that too much. But they're not working from their adult rational mind. They're working from their reptilian mind, adult rational mind. They're not working from their adult rational mind. They're working from their limbic, their reptilian brain, which is very emotional and runs on emotions and is very scary. And for whatever reason, they're unable to rationalize. So when you're with someone who's very, very angry, you can't really have a rational discussion with them because they can't think rationally. Not in that moment. They just can't. So why pacing is helpful is because when you're matching them with emotional intensity, but with positive words, right, with affirming words of, I understand, yeah, this is terrible. I understand how this could be terrible for you, right? You saying things that's affirming the person in the emotional intensity. Now you're meeting them emotion to emotion. Yet again, I'm constantly, you know, emphasizing this, keeping it positive, positive, the words positive. Then, right? Well, they start to calm down. Now, part of the reason they calm down is, of course, like I just said, they're seeing that you see them and they matter and they notice, but also the nervous system can only hold on to an emotion for so long before it has to change. So once they see that, they can calm down and then you can start to lead them into a better place, maybe a more rational place. But when someone is in the throes of just emotionalism, you really can't go there. You can't go there until you can lead them out of it. And you have to first pace them, show that you're there with them emotionally, that you empathize with them, and then once they see that, they can feel comfortable enough to come out of it. Now, does this work all the time? No, but for the majority of time, it does. And it's something you can definitely try. So again, why adults, when adults are acting irrational, or you're getting into a heated argument, and then all sorts of things are coming out, and you're like, where is this coming from? I don't, well, it could be coming from their childhood experience, and that child inside is hurt, and that's what's showing up. So this is why pacing and leading, whether it's for a real child or an adult whose child is showing up in the moment, this is when this is really, really helpful. So pacing and leading. So when you get into a heated argument with someone, your spouse, an adult child, a stranger in the street, whatever it is, think about pacing them, pay attention, say, where are they emotionally? What are they doing with their body? And now you have to obviously be in your mind, your higher self, to be able to see this and notice this and not be triggered by them. So this takes time, breathe, take some deep breaths before moving forward. And then look at them, okay, how are they holding their body? You know, the volume of their voice, right? Their face. And you start to pace them, emotional state to emotional state, yet again, keeping your words affirming and positive. Like, I understand that you're feeling this way. I totally get it, right? I get how this could be whatever, very angering to you, make you very angry, I get that. And then once you see they start to come down, then you can just start to lead them and bring them down, slow your breath down. That's one way to pace. Start to slow your breathing down. Start to slow, doesn't even have to be your words. Start to slow your body movements down. Start to release the tension in your body. When you do that, you are leading them out of that purely emotional response, where then you can have a rational conversation. So that is pacing and leading. And try that. Now, you may have to practice it, right? I mean, it's not going to happen right overnight. This is a skill that definitely takes practice. Any of the strategies I share takes practice. So what I always say is choose, if you're going to try this, choose a situation. You could actually, wait, let me preface this before you do it with a real person. Imagine it. Imagine maybe a recent encounter with someone, right? Someone close to you or whatever. Somebody that tripped you up and got you there, right? And you just fired back, okay? And it really led nowhere. It didn't get you anywhere, because typically it doesn't. Again, if you're not thinking, you're in your emotional brain. And when you're in your emotional brain, nothing's getting heard. So imagine a time. So if you would like to do this, this is something you can do. Imagine a recent time where you got into a full-blown argument, okay? Or something got really emotional. And you imagine how you responded, see the way you responded, and you might think to yourself, why didn't this work? Okay, what happened here? And now think about how you could have paced and led them into a better place where you could have a discussion. So just imagine what your response could have been. And then you could also, the second part of that exercise, before you actually bring this out into the real world, is imagine what it might look like in the future. What it might look like in the future. So if you get into an, see the past argument, see how you responded, then see if you could respond by pacing and leading, how that might look. And then, you know, practice that in your mind, experience that in your mind, and then imagining, well, what will I do next time? What can I do next time? How can I use this pacing and leading if this happens again? Right? Thanksgiving's coming up, for instance, okay? And some families are great at Thanksgiving. And with everything that's going on with right now with the elections and everything, some things may not be Thanksgiving. I'm not sure when this podcast comes out. But then you got Christmas. You got all the holidays coming up. Choose a holiday or Hanukkah, whatever it is. You know, you might have some issues with some people that, you know, and that's okay. That's normal too. And think about this pacing and leading. So imagine in your mind a previous argument with someone and how you responded. And then imagine it again with responding with this pacing and leading. Pacing, meeting them emotionally where they are. Emotional state, meaning your physiology, the way your body is, facial, the tone of your voice. Yet, again, I know I keep pushing them because it's really important. Keeping your body, or keeping your words affirming and positive and understanding. So you're just physically and vocally meeting them, not through the words, okay? So, because then that just ruins it. So then after you get through the pacing, then start to lead them out of it to calm down through use of breath, through words, lowering your voice, you know, and see if that doesn't help bring them back down to a more rational place. So imagine an argument, imagine if it happens again, and then the more you imagine it, you're practicing it in your brain, then try it with someone. And maybe don't try it with someone that really triggers you and really like sets you off, but maybe with an argument that doesn't mean that much. Maybe it's over, you know, what TV show to watch. I don't know. You know what I mean? And just see. So something that's real low risk, a real low risk, communication you have with someone over, you know, something, right? What to have for dinner or whatever it is. Okay, something minimal. When you practice things, like I say, it's like lifting weights. You don't go into the gym and you start lifting the heaviest weights you have, right? They have at the gym. You don't do that. You go to the gym, you start with, you know, maybe 5-pound weights. And then as you get stronger and you get better at it, you increase your resistance, you increase the weight. Same thing here with any of the strategies in coaching. you start light. Start lightly. Choose an example, or choose to practice with something that is not high risk or high emotional, you know, volume to it, but something that is lighter, that you practice. And then as you get more skilled in these strategies and these techniques, and they become more automatic, then, you know, you can challenge yourself, or you won't really need to, because it's not like you have to go searching for a fight. Sometimes it comes to you, but you start to be able to use them in much more serious issues or situations. All right, I hope that helped. Pacing and leading. I'm telling you, get this down, it will change your communication. It will change your communications. Because the question you always want to ask, I mean, if you want to ask, is what is the outcome I want from this? I mean, truly. Is the outcome for me to be right or to be in relationship? Is my outcome to say, I'm right, I'm right, I'm right? Or is it to help you, someone else, to understand the truth about something? So we have to come at it first by realizing what it is we really, really want. And sometimes it feels great to be right, but it's a short-lived feeling. I find that what I really, really want is for them to understand and to learn or to grow and to love and to be in relationship. All right, that's it for me. Hey, have a great day, beautiful day, and I hope if I don't chat with you before Thanksgiving, although I'm sure I will, have a great Thanksgiving, and I'll talk soon. Bye-bye.